Well, we have been talking about things that involve our country with the upcoming election and different things going on in a series talking about national concerns. We have the next. Do we have another? There we go. Thank you very much, sir. There we go. National issues. So we started off talking about different leaders in the Old Testament and looked at some good qualities, bad qualities of leaders. And then last week we started to kind of a two-part look at two different sides of the coin. Last week we looked at what's called civil obedience and what is expected of Christians and what God expects of us when it comes to how we act towards those in authority. We talked about how the concept of government, of civil, an established government, of authority and submission, that was God's idea in the first place. And so if it was God's idea, then it's inherently good. So that was something to help us shape our attitudes around different things going on right now. And so the idea to have authority and to have people be in submission to them, that was God's idea. God's idea of organizing people and to keep order and to stay away from chaos. And that God's purpose for government was simple. It was to provide protection for the rights of all the citizens and to punish those who violate the rights of others. And that we as God's children, knowing these things, that God has a purpose and that government was created by God, we have a responsibility to obey, to respect, to submit, and to acknowledge these civil rulers that are placed above us and authority over us. And Paul even said we need to pay taxes to support them financially. And the last little bit of that was that we need to pray for them. And so that's the one side of the coin. Just want to hit a kind of a last week on, you know how you watch series on TV and they always have the last week or previously on, you know, so. But we need that side of the coin because this side of the coin is just going to look like anarchy if we don't have this side of the coin. That's this side of the coin last week. The other side of the coin is civil disobedience. And that's what we're talking about today. When enough is enough. On December 1st, 1955, in Montgomery, Alabama, a 42-year-old black woman boarded a bus. She paid her fare, and she walked to the first row of seats in the colored section of the bus and took her seat. As the whites-only section of the bus filled up in the first few rows, the sign that marked the colored section, the bus driver got up and moved it to the seat behind where this 42-year-old black woman was sitting. And he told the four black people that were sitting in that row to stand up to make room for the white passengers that had gotten on, that had boarded. There were only about two or three of them that boarded at that stop. Three of the four black people moved, but this 42-year-old woman remained seated. She did courteously slide to the window seat to allow room, but she did not get up and move back. The bus driver called the police, and Miss Rosa Parks was arrested for sitting in a white-only section when really it was a black section. It was a colored section when she sat down, and it only became a white-only section when they moved the sign. Rosa Parks is a good example of civil disobedience. She had a great reputation. It followed her around. She was married. She was employed. She was hardworking. She had a quiet and peaceful disposition. And so for her to make a stand like this, it meant a lot and it said a lot because of who she was, what her character was. Her act of civil disobedience was a key movement in the civil rights movement of America. And unfortunately, it is quite different from the civil disobedience we see today. There's a time coming and is already here in certain areas of our life, and I believe that it's going to possibly get broader and more more encompassing of all of us instead of individual situations. I think we're all going to find ourselves in the same situation where civil disobedience as Christians already is present in some of the areas in our life, but I think it's going to be increasing more and more in the direction that our country seems like it's moving. Civil disobedience is not a new thing. Rosa Parks, though she was a great example of it, she did not invent civil disobedience. She was not the founder. Civil disobedience was happening thousands of years ago. If we go back 250,000, no, two, 2,500, there we go, that's the word I was looking for, 2,500 years ago, in 586 BC, the southern kingdom of Israel, which was called Judah, it was taken over by Babylon, and that was the only thing that was left, that was the only remnant left of Israel. And so when Babylon took them over, their practice was to take their best and brightest of any of the places that they took over. They would take their best and brightest, take them in, indoctrinate them for about 3 years into the Babylonian culture and teach them the language so that they would then be able to put them to work for Babylon and just keep making Babylon that much better by taking the best and the brightest of all the different places they conquered. So when Judah fell to Babylon, four of those best and brightest were some four people that you guys know probably pretty well. You guys know who they are, don't you? We have Daniel, yes, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, the three there that go together. And they were taken, and the first step was to introduce them into the Babylonian culture. And among that was to introduce them to Babylonian food, which was different than the food allowances that God had allowed the Jews to eat. And so Daniel asked to not defile himself with this food. And so he went to the chief official and asked if he could just eat vegetables and water. And the chief official was worried that this, if they did this, he was worried what would happen to them physically, and that the king would have his head if the guys underneath his authority weren't looking so great, if they weren't strong and didn't look healthy. But Daniel struck up a deal with him to test this and to give them only vegetables and water for 10 days and then just see what we look like after 10 days. And if we look worse, then we look worse. But if we look better, then we look better. And so the chief agreed to this. And after 10 days, they looked just fine. So he took away their choice food and gave them vegetables and water and continued to indoctrinate them into the Babylonian lifestyle for 3 years. And then they went to work for the king. One night the king had a dream that troubled him, and so he brought in his magicians and enchanters and sorcerers and the astrologers, and he told them that he had a dream that troubled him and that they were to tell him the interpretation of his dream, but there was a catch. They also had to tell him his dream. So he said, "You have to tell me my dream, what it was, and interpret it for me." And these magicians and enchanters and sorcerers and astrologers, they're like, nobody can do that. We can't do that. And the king's kind of like, well, if you're legit, you know, if you're an enchanter, if you're a real magician, if you're a real sorcerer, this shouldn't be difficult for you. This is the rule. This is how it is. This is the deal. And if you can't do this, well, then we'll rip you into pieces. That's in the Bible. We'll rip you into pieces and we will turn your houses into rubble. And so these men said, there's no way. No one can do this. This is an unfair request. Tell us your dream and we can interpret it, but we can't tell you what your dream is. And the king was like, hey, this is the deal. And so a decree was issued to put the wise men to death because none of them could tell the king what his dream was. And so some men came for Daniel and his friends. Though they weren't in that original group, they were still in the big umbrella of wise men, and they were going to be put to death because of this. And so Daniel asked to speak with the king, and he spoke with wisdom and tact to get this request. And because of the way that he handled himself, and we can go back to looking at the Rosa Parks and that story of her and how she handled herself, there's a lot to be said for that. And so because of his wisdom and his tact, they agreed to let him talk to the king. So he went and spoke to the king himself, and he told the king, or asked the king, if they would grant them just a little bit of time to see if they could, to see if he could complete his request and tell him what his dream was and interpret it. So then Daniel went and talked to his friends and asked them to all pray with him and for him. And that night, God revealed the dream and the interpretation to Daniel. And Daniel returned to the king. And the king said to Daniel, "Surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings." Daniel remained in the royal court, and then because of this, at Daniel's request, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego then were made administrators over the province of Babylon. And so then we have a little bit later, we have another story that happens here in the book of Daniel. The king made an image of gold that was about 90 feet high, 90 feet high, and 9 feet wide. And he summoned all the officials, which would have included Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they were, because they were now administrators. And they were told to worship this image of gold, this 90-foot image of gold. The instructions were given that when the band started jamming, they were to bow and worship. And the band was filled with all sorts of instruments. I mean, they had a horn section, they had a flute and a lyre and a harp and a zither. And the zither was played by none other than Enmed Van Halen. I mean, he was amazing zither player back in his day. And so the band cranked up and all the officials were there and the harp hit a few chords and the flute and the lyre started to run a melody. And then the horns came in with a counter melody, and then Enmed Van Halen just started ripping into a zither solo. And it was on. The band was cranking out, and the officials bowed down and they worshiped. All except for three. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not. And now the penalty for noncompliance was to be thrown into the furnace. You guys know this. You've probably heard the story a bazillion times. It's a good story. And when the king was told that these three disobeyed, he was very angry. He sent for them. He questioned them. And then when it was obvious that they were not going to bow, he had them tied up. He turned the furnace up seven times hotter than what it was before, and he had them thrown in. In fact, it was so hot that the men that bound them and took them to the furnace, they burnt up, throwing them in. I think that's an amazing fact. After they're thrown in, the king freaks out because he sees not just three people, he sees how many? Four people walking around in the furnace, unharmed, and one of them looked like the son of the gods. We know who that was. So he called out to them and told them to come out. And so they did, and they didn't even smell like campfire. You know how you've been out camping and you just can't avoid that. I kind of like that. I like coming home from camping or being around a campfire, you know, roasting marshmallows or hot dogs and coming home. And I'm like, you know what? I just don't want to take my clothes off quite yet. I like that, you know, that smoky smell. But they didn't even smell like fire. They didn't even smell like soot or ashes or smoke or anything. Not even the smell of the fire was on them. Nothing was burned on them at all, not a hair on their head, not their robes. I mean, they were dressed in just the best flammable material available. They had robes and turbans on, and just, I mean, it was just, they went into the fire that way, and they came out, not even a hair on their head, not their robes, not their turbans. Nothing was burnt up. And so this king makes a new law that protected Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And then if we were to skip over to chapter 6, we see another famous story in the book of Daniel. How many of you guys remember what that story is? Daniel in a lion's den. Yes. And this is another story of civil disobedience. Another king was in charge at this time, King Darius, and Daniel had rose to a position of great power in Babylon and was on the verge of even stepping into a greater position. And there was a lot of jealousy among the other officials and those that were around him. And so they looked for places to discredit Daniel, but they couldn't find any. And so they figured, well, if we're not going to be able to find anything corrupt in him, we're going to have to create a situation that's going to cause him to be disobedient. And so they set up a scenario where they went to the king and they said, hey, issue a decree that no one can pray to anyone else but you for the next 30 days. No God or no human, just you for 30 days. And the king thought, yeah, I'm king. Yeah, that sounds good. We can do that. Now, the king liked Daniel a whole lot, so this caused a big issue when things erupted. So the idea is if they disobeyed, then they would have to be thrown into the lion's den, yes. So the king agreed, and he made the law, and after Daniel learned about the law, he continued to pray three times a day. He had civil disobedience. He did so privately. He did so peacefully. But he still prayed to God and disobeyed the law, even with the penalty being set as high as it was. And so he was caught, he was set up and caught and brought before the king. And the king was sad about the news, but the law was the law. And he couldn't go against that. And so he had Daniel thrown into the lion's den. And that night the king couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep. And as soon as daylight hit, the king ran down to the lion's den and called down to Daniel. And Daniel, being a vegetarian, I guess that kind of just permeated into the lions that evening. Now, Daniel shares. He says, hey, an angel of the Lord came down and shut the mouths of the lion, and I'm just fine. So they pulled Daniel out. And then I hate it for the families. But the men who set Daniel up, they were then thrown into the lion's den. And all of a sudden, the lions were not vegetarians anymore. the men and their wives and their children, their whole families were thrown in there, and they were devoured in just seconds. So those are the cliff notes of just the first four chapters of the book of Daniel, or not the first four, but the first three and six. So let's take some notes here. I wanted to give us kind of a broad view of what was going on. We're going to dip in and pull out some scriptures in the midst of these stories to kind of pick some things apart. But when it comes to us and the other side of that coin, civil disobedience, when enough is enough, chapter one, when questioning authority, pick your battles. This is going to become important. A lot of us who've raised kids, you know, that's a big source of wisdom there. Pick your battles. And that's a great source of wisdom when it comes to civil disobedience as well. Pick your battles. Let me remind you that there's a difference between a law that allows an action and a law that forces an action. Though it was set up that Daniel would eat the king's food, it wasn't being forced on him. When he went to the official, the chief official in charge of him, he said, all right, I'll let you do this for 10 days. So it was something more of a requested law. It was more of something that, hey, you can have this food. We want you to have this food. We want you to be healthy. But it wasn't forcing an action. Now you jump over to Daniel chapter 6 and the story we just reviewed, Daniel and the lion's den, that was a forced action. That was a law that forced an action. You will not pray to anyone but the king for 30 days. We need to remember there is a difference, because I think we get, and I do this too, I'm with you. I could stand on the floor there with you and sit down in the pews and have someone else be the voice for this, because I need to hear it myself. We get up in arms over a lot of things that are allowed laws and not forced laws. I know last year I was really bothered, upset, whatever you want to call it, and I think you guys were with me, most of you guys, last June when they passed the same-sex marriage side of things that allowed them to be called a married couple. I was offended by that because marriage is a God thing. Marriage is a word that came from the Bible, and if they want a different definition, they can have their own definition, but in their agreement with the government, I can't, you know, that's between them and the government, but that term of marriage, that was a big deal for me. However, I have to look at that and say, when it comes to civil disobedience, them allowing that is one thing. You know, if the government forces me to perform the marriage of a homosexual couple or a lesbian couple, then that's a time I pick my battle. And that's a time when civil disobedience takes place. We have to look at that on all sorts of the other things that are going on around us with the government and different things and sort that out and say there are laws that allow things, and that's a difference from a law that forces things. When we start being forced into areas, and that's a place where there's no question to it. But you pick your battles on this side of things. We want to stand up for what's right and what should be happening. But our government's not a Christian government. Not as much as what I'm seeing. And so our beliefs, what we stand for, we have to do our best to share those, to get those out, to be influential in our world. But when it comes to civil disobedience, we have to look and say, okay, let's pick our battles here. And if there's a law that's forcing us to do something against what God would ask us to do, then there's no question. Then we stand and we do what Daniel did. We do what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did. In that chapter 1, it says that Daniel then stood, or said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That was the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That was their Jewish name, which I think it's kind of interesting. We use Daniel's Jewish name, and we use Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's Babylonian names. And but that's who they were. So Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel said, please test your servants for 10 days. This was in the midst of eating the food given to them. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance to that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. This civil disobedience there. It was against a law that was more of a choice, but he handled it with tact. He handled it with a peaceable resolution, and it was an agreeable resolution. So when we're looking towards civil disobedience, and in these places where it's a law that's allowed and not a law that's forcing things, when we go about things, there are ways that we can be influential there. There are ways that we can talk about that, and we can go about a peaceful and agreeable resolution in some of those areas if we seek that out. In other places, we might not be able to do that. When we go to chapter 6, we see that with Daniel in the lion's den. His civil disobedience there was peaceful, but it was not agreeable. Whereas the food story in chapter 1 was peaceful and agreeable. So pick your battles. There's a difference between a law that allows an action and a law that forces an action. Did I get the second note on that one? Yes, I did. Okay. So number two then, peaceful pushback, FTW. How many of you guys are familiar with this? Some of you guys who have teenagers texting and different, you would know this, Dave, wouldn't you? FTW, what is that? Putting him on the spot. She's even making a face, really? All right, well, second service will be interesting. Really, Dawn's even that way. Logan? No. For the win? Come on, I've seen that a bazillion places. So, but yeah, so if you need to write that in there, you can. For the win. For the win. It's a term that, texting language there that's used to say, hey, this is a good way to do things. This is the right way to do things. Here's the best thing that you can do. Peaceful pushback for the win. You see that in Daniel's life and in a situation where, you know, I was talking to my wife about this as I was reading back through the book of Daniel myself this week and refreshing my mind of the events there. And just this, sorry, it would have been awful to be in Daniel's shoes. I mean, we read him and he's a hero to us, but if you just think of how awful life would have been for him, he was ripped from his homeland, he was ripped from Judah. He was sent in and just separated from, you have no information on what happens with the rest of his family or anything like that. You just know that he and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are pulled out. They are the best and the brightest. They're sent for 3 years to brainwash them into the Babylonian lifestyle and culture. And they're doing their best to hang on to their beliefs and their faith in the midst of this, in a time when it would be very, very easy to say, what are you doing, God? Why are you putting me in this position? Why did you leave me here? Why did you let this happen to me? What, you know, and we don't see that in their attitude. And it also would have been a time where they could have gone that way and they could have, you know, been angry and upset towards God and God allowing this to happen. They could have gone the other way also. They could have gone full bore, just rebellion and just, you know, sticking their feet in the sand and just, I'm not moving it on. We're going to make a big rebellion here and we're going to turn over Babylon. And they'd end up, you know, being thrown in the lion's den pretty quickly, or furnaces or whatever they had available. But that wasn't what he did. Daniel and his friends, they were just amazing examples for us in a time that just would have been an awful, awful time to live. We've got it great compared to Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And even in his situation, even in his circumstances, even with everything that was surrounding him, he had a peaceful pushback. And that's amazing. He didn't cave. He didn't fall in. He still pushed back, but he did so peacefully, in a way that was honorable, a way that was respecting. And we can look at this side of the coin from last week and say, you know what? He was respecting authority. He was honoring authority. He was able to cover this side of the coin, as well as this side of the coin, in places where civil disobedience was necessary. So, chapter 2. This is the story about the dream, and that they were asked to give the dream and the interpretation, or they'd be torn into pieces. Number two, when questioning authority, be mindful of what comes out of your mouth and how it comes out. Not only the words that come out of your mouth, but the tone you use, the body language you use, how you say what you say. That's a big deal when you're talking to anyone. But especially when you're talking and addressing someone in authority over you. It's a big difference when you pull someone over and they're respectful, and they have their hands up on the top of the wheel, and maybe even turn a light on before you walk up the car, correct? You're going to have a whole lot better disposition. Chris is a police officer. He's going to feel a whole lot better about that situation, coming into that with that respect and just the body language. Turn the light on, roll the window down, put your hands up on the wheel where he can see them. Speak kindly, use respect, and there's going to be a whole lot better relationship there between you and the officer when they come to the window, as opposed to getting out of your car and yelling at them and pointing your finger at them and reaching into your coat or your... We've seen that. That's not the way that you participate in civil disobedience. That's how you get shot. So we as Christians, and we're looking at this, and we're looking at this side of the coin, we need to watch what comes out of our mouth, and not only what comes out, but how it comes out when we question authority, when we're put into a position where we need to question laws or what's been asked of us. And this isn't just in a government setting. We're talking about it in a government setting. But you can use any of these things that we're talking about today at work. And some of you are asked to do things that are unethical. You're asked to do things that go against what the Bible says. And it's being given to you by an authority figure, by a supervisor, by a boss, by an owner. And so you can use some of what we're talking about today in the book of Daniel to be able to push back peacefully against that, to be able to say, okay, I need to question this authority because it's asking me to do something that's against my beliefs. And when you do, you speak with respect. You watch what comes out of your mouth, how it comes out of your mouth. There in chapter 2, we read that when Arioch, this was the guy that went to Daniel, he was going to kill Daniel. He was sent to kill Daniel because all the wise men, the enchanters and sorcerers and magicians, they couldn't interpret the dream. So when Arioch, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with what? Wisdom and tact. He watched what was coming out of his mouth, and he watched how it was coming out of his mouth. He spoke with wisdom and tact. He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. He was going to kill him. You know, now they're having a conversation. It's just amazing that he just turned things around that quick with a kind words, disposition, with wisdom and tact. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so that he might interpret the dream for him. So let's write this down. Speak with wisdom and tact. When we're looking at what's going to come out of our mouth, how it's going to come out, let those two words come to mind from the book of Daniel and say, all right, I need to speak with wisdom and tact. That's never a bad thing. Never a bad thing to think about speaking with wisdom and tact. But especially when we're going to be questioning authority, when we're going to be pushing back peacefully. Then a little later in that chapter, it says, then Daniel returned to his house and explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He urged them to plead for mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven. So let's write this down. This is important, and I know we know it, but we need to be reminded of it. Seek God's guidance and wisdom through personal prayer and the prayer support of believing friends. Don't go at these things alone. I've got some friends that I text when things are going on in my life and when I'm going into a situation or going in the here or I'm dealing with something and I text them and say, hey, can you lift me up in prayer? You know, just a few minutes and, you know, and so that's, I've kind of got a little group of prayer warriors there. We can't forget to use that. We can't go into situations, especially big situations, whatever might be facing us. Maybe it's talking to a supervisor or boss about a situation that causes you to breach your integrity that you believe in, your morals, your values. Maybe it's dealing with a government official or someone in authority when it comes to our government, either now or sometime in the future. We need to ask for prayer. We need to have people that we know will pray for us and go to our friends, and we need to be in prayer in the midst of this. In chapter 3, our obedience to God always comes before or above our obedience to human authority. Our obedience to God always comes above our obedience to human authority. In Daniel chapter 3, the story of the big, tall, 90-foot golden idol, we read, "Then a herald shouted out, 'People of all races and nations and languages, listen to the king's command. When you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither.'" You thought I was making the zither part up, weren't you? It's right there. "Zither, lyre, harp, pipes, and other musical instruments, bow to the ground to worship King Nebuchadnezzar's gold statue. Anyone who refuses to obey will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." It was laid out very plainly there. Here are the consequences to disobedience. Let me go back to that note earlier. There is a difference between a law that allows an action and a law that forces an action. No matter what the consequences, no matter what is in front of us, Christians, no matter what faces us, we bow to God first. It might be more blatant and more, it might be easier for us to see in a situation if there were a 90-foot idol being placed before us and we were being given the consequence of being thrown into a furnace. Think about other situations in your life where this occurs, where you're being asked to give up a little bit of your values, a little bit of your morals, where you're asked to involve yourself in a little bit of a situation that goes against your integrity, that goes against the honor and holiness that you try to live in. And the consequence might not be being thrown into a blazing furnace. The consequence might be not getting a promotion or even getting a demotion or losing your job. The consequence might just simply be social, of feeling like you don't belong, or that maybe because you're going to make a stand or you're going to stand out, you're going to stand apart, that you might lose some friends or you might be seen as the weirdo or whatever. Whatever those things are, the consequence when you're looking at a 90-foot statue in a burning, a blazing furnace, it's easy to see the situation, but in our life, we need to look around and notice these situations are happening all the time around us. And we as Christians, our allegiance is to God first and foremost above any human authority. Peter says in Acts chapter 5, Peter and the apostles replied, "We must obey God rather than any human authority." A little later in chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we were thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand." I love that. But even if he does not, even if nothing happens, even if we make this stand and God does nothing, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. That's a strong stance. When we're forced into a hard stance against authority, we need to remember that our trust in God is not based on the outcome, but it is simply based on the person of God. It's not based on the outcome. Whatever happens, come what may, if our God doesn't save us and we burn up in that furnace, hey, guess what? He just freed us from your authority. He just freed us from your control. It's going to happen one way or the other right here. He's going to rescue us and free us from your control, or we're going to burn in the furnace and we're going to be free from your control. Whatever the outcome, that's not what matters. What matters is the person of God and the relationship I have with God. We need to be reminded of that, Christians, because sometimes we doubt our stands based on the outcome. We can't do that. Things don't always turn out great. We still need to stand. Things don't always work out in our favor. Our allegiance is still with God first, above any human authority. After God rescued them from the furnace, we're told in verse 28, that Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel to rescue his servants who trusted in him. They defied the king's command and were willing to die rather than serve or worship any god except their own. Therefore, I make this decree. If any people, whatever their race or nation or language, speak a word against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they will be torn limb from limb and their houses be turned into heaps of rubble. There is no other God who can rescue like this. When we make our stands, Christians, it will be noticed. We need to be reminded that making a stand based on our convictions has the ability to make changes in those around us, government included. So there are already times and places in our life where we can look at this and say, okay, yes, I need a reminder from the book of Daniel on civil disobedience. There may be a time coming in our nation where it's even bigger than it is now. So think about those places and pick your battles. Be reminded that there is a difference between a law that allows an action and a law that forces an action. Peaceful pushback for the win. You guys learned a new term today. When questioning authority, be mindful of what comes out of your mouth and how it comes out. Speak with wisdom and tact. Pray and seek God's guidance. Get a prayer group behind you when going into certain situations. Remember that obedience to God always comes above our obedience to human authority. And that our trust in God is not based on the outcome, it's based on the person of God. And that when we make our stands, in the times when civil disobedience is called for by our conscience, by our morals, by our values given to us by God, in those times when we make a stand based on our convictions, those events, those times, they have the ability to change those around us, even changing our government around us.